What is biophilia? It's not a familiar term, but it describes a very recognizable phenomenon, the love of nature and of other living things. The word was introduced by the German psychologist Erich Fromm, but no one may have embodied the tendency more than English naturalist Charles Darwin. The new book, Darwin's Love of Life, A Singular Case of Biophilia, argues that the great biologist's primary inspiration was his powerful fascination with the natural world. The author, Kay Harrell, is a writer on science and culture who's published essays on historical personalities like Darwin, William James, Wallace Stevens, and Edward Lear. Here she is to share some big ideas from her book.
Hi there to all you fans of big ideas. Thanks for choosing this book bite. My name is Kay Harrell. I live in the Hudson Valley region in New York with my 105-pound Shiloh Shepherd dog. Here, I share with you five quirky discoveries that emerged as I pondered Charles Darwin's love of life for my recent book. Insight number one. The love of life, biophilia, is a force of nature. Perhaps you have heard of biophilia. It's now a buzzword among green architects and environmental dreamers. But the concept of biophilia, Latinate for love of life, has far more history and gravitas. A first definition was sketched by psychoanalyst Erich Fromm in 1973 as, quote, the passionate love of life and of all that is alive, end quote. The late, great Edward O. Wilson wrote eloquently of biophilia as an affinity for nature. In Darwin's eyes, quote, love for all living creatures is the most noble attribute of man, end quote. Beginning as self-preservation, biophilia diversifies into the pursuit of the new, the true, and the beautiful. Biophilia is like gravity, a raw and lawful energy that just is. And just as gravity is matter's attraction to matter, biophilia is life's attraction to life, or in the words of poet Khalil Gibran, quote, life's longing for itself, end quote. And if gravity determines the apple's fall from the tree, biophilia's drive for life determines that we hunger for that apple. According to the work of one theorist, biophilia may even have evolved from gravity. Understanding biophilia as a force of nature is key to understanding ourselves. Insight number two. Darwin was a nice guy. In a memoir Darwin intended for his children, his modesty and moral code shine. In a collection of 15,000 letters he wrote and received, Darwin's generosity and kindness are ubiquitous. Darwin befriended the indigenous guides he relied on during his five-year voyage around the world. How? Bivouacking in wilderness, Darwin proved an excellent horseman, a sharp marksman, a savant with dogs, and always willing to dine on the day's yield, puma, ostrich, whatever. Darwin inspires hagiography, it's true, but biographers are not alone in succumbing to his charms. After a lunch at Darwin's home, novelist Henry James wrote, quote, Darwin is the sweetest, simplest, gentlest old Englishman you ever saw. He said nothing wonderful, and was wonderful in no way but in not being so, end quote. And recounting a long visit with Darwin, Russian plant physiologist Clement Timiryazev wrote, quote, I couldn't help comparing him to an ancient sage or an Old Testament patriarch. After our conversation began, I saw him as a very kindly and gentle man, and felt that I had known him for a long time. The greatest scientist had turned out to be the most affable of men. End quote. Darwin may have shattered many a cultural certainty, but he was nonetheless a nice guy. Insight number three. Question facts and accept ignorance. Before the word disinformation was coined, reportedly by Joseph Stalin, before postmodernism, before Twitter, before today's scourge of alternative facts, the false fact existed. It was present in Darwin's lexicon. Darwin warned in The Descent of Man, quote, "False facts are highly injurious to the process of science," end quote. One of Darwin's habits of mind was that he never took a putative fact for granted. The insight here? Every fact has a provenance. This is increasingly important to remember in these days of abundant information, disinformation, misinformation, and nonsense. But the verity of any datum has long been a slippery business. Darwin understood a fact to be a product of logic, research, reality, and plausible proof. Darwin was scrupulous about what, quote, "we may infer," end quote, what, quote, "many facts clearly show," when he is, quote, "guided by theoretical consideration." When Dr. Hooker permits me to add that he thinks the following statements are fairly well established. And finally, that it is, quote, "always advisable to perceive clearly our own ignorance." We would do well to model Darwin, to always examine facts, and to know and accept when we are ignorant. Insight number 4. The aesthetic sense originates in the desire for survival. For Darwin, as for other theorists, the love of beauty emerges from the drive for life. Aesthetic pleasure developed from our ancestors' satisfaction, not to mention continued life, on obtaining basic needs. That is to say, certain natural phenomena key to survival are universally considered beautiful, such as the trill of a brook, which signifies the pure water necessary to life, a fire in a hearth, which gives sustaining warmth, rain sluicing down the roof is the sound of shelter, an expansive view affords safety from enemies, likewise a high perch. When leaves rustle in a breeze, fresh air is audible. The cool of a summer evening is relief from heat, as poet Wallace Stevens wrote, quote, "the freshness of light has been fresh a long time." These phenomena enable us to live, so we feel them as beautiful. As Darwin's grandfather asserted in his book Zoonomia, quote, "our perception of beauty consists in our recognition of those objects which have inspired our love by the pleasure which they afford to many of our senses, of warmth, of touch, of smell, or taste, hunger, and thirst." Or, as Emerson wrote, "beauty rests on necessities." Insight number 5. You can make a crazy quilt with knowledge, or validating Wilson's consilience. The method I used in my book was a big idea proposed by the naturalist Edward O. Wilson. My insight? His method works. In his 1998 book, Consilience, The Unity of Knowledge, Wilson argued for explorations that draw on all scholarly, scientific, and cultural endeavors to enable ideas to, quote, jump, quote, together, to create synergy. He wrote, quote, "the strongest appeal of consilience is in the prospect of intellectual adventure, and, given modest success, the value of understanding the human condition with a higher degree of certainty," end quote. In my intellectual adventure, I drew on aesthetics, anthropology, astronomy, biology, evolutionary theories, philosophy, physics, poetry, primatology, psychoanalysis, theoretical physics, and zoology. Using consilience, one line of poetry, one theory by a philosopher about the evolution of the universe, has as much intellectual heft as any rigorous biological proof or aesthetic dissection. Using consilience, we mix and match ideas. We create a crazy quilt that is nonetheless square and true, or, as it were, covers a new big idea. Consilience has not received much uptake. It deserves more notice and use. So, I hope these insights have intrigued you. I have collected and offered plenty more in my book. Thank you for listening and for caring about ideas.
Thank you, Kay. That was Kay Harrell with 5 Big Ideas from Darwin's Love of Life, A Singular Case of Biophilia. To hear some ideas from another writer who takes inspiration from Charles Darwin, have a listen to A Voice in the Wilderness. A pioneering biologist explains how evolution can help us solve our biggest problems, by Joseph Graves, Jr. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.